Are you looking for your next great read, but stumped on where to find it? Let me be your book fairy godmother. When you join Rhonda with a Book on Patreon for $5 a month, I will send you a personalized book recommendation, plus my All Things Bookish newsletter every month, and give you a shout out and plug your project here on the podcast. If you're on a budget, no worries. For only a dollar a month, you can get just the newsletter, which includes exclusive content not found on the blog, and a collection of links to articles, stories, and products book nerds will love, curated by yours truly. Go to patreon.com/rondawithabook to join. Thanks so much for your support, and as always, happy reading. Good day, friends, and welcome to Rhonda with a Book, where I, Rhonda, spill the tea on books. Not literally, of course. This week is the first of what I hope will be many reader chat episodes, where I get to sit down with a fellow reader over Skype and chat about books. And for this first reader chat, I'm talking to Claire Eastaw, who you may recognize as a co-host of Fictional Hangover podcast. You'll be able to find links to all the things that we discuss, as well as a list of all of Claire's recommended books at rondawithabook.com. Enjoy this reader chat. So I am joined today by a special guest, better known as the co-host of Fictional Hangover podcast. It's Claire.
Hi.
Hello. Hello. How are you? How are you today?
I'm splendid. I'm absolutely splendid.
Oh, that's good to hear.
How intensely British does that sound?
It's sufficiently... I think that's sufficiently British. Get some fish and chips.
Oh no, it's called a fish.
You guys are still in like lockdown, right?
Semi lockdown. The situation's a bit all over the place.
Semi lockdown.
Yeah, I have thoughts and feelings on the political situation in my country.
Sure.
Not very favorable. Wear face
as masks. I do for mine.
Yeah. Oh, I've got thoughts and feelings about America as well. We can wear face masks indoors if you go shopping. Outdoors is anyone's game, apparently. Schools are going to reopen in September, guaranteed.
Okay.
But still no large gatherings. It's a little confusing, if I'm honest. So I'm just bare minimum of going out and socializing. I'd rather be safe than sorry.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So obviously you, for Fictional Hangover, you read a book like every week, right?
At least. We have recently done an episode where we covered four books in one. There were novellas, I will grant you that.
Wow.
But we did, that was for the House of Night series. We covered the novellas, so it was four books for that one. But previously when we covered the House of Night original series, we were three books per episode, because it's, you know, it's a 12 book series. It would have taken us an entire year if we'd done it one every month.
Mm-hmm.
We are huge Fictional Hangover advocates of audiobooks. Massive audiobook advocates. So
yes,
probably 90% of what we read, we actually listen to. So it makes it a little bit easier. That's like a life hack.
Right. Right. Yeah, because you can like be doing other things while you're listening to your book. And so you're not, you know, neglecting your duties.
It's amazing how your chores around the house can be made so much more interesting having an audiobook in the background. I'm not huge on music. I am absolutely terrible with music, so it's always audiobooks for me.
Oh, okay. Interesting. So when you're reading or listening to something that's for fictional hangover that you're going to have to discuss, do you feel like you like have to pay closer attention, or do you like take notes, or how do you like kind of process that knowing that you're going to have to discuss it?
Kind of differently. So, for example, currently we are going to be covering the Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes by Suzanne Collins. That is going to be the episode we record this week. So by the time this episode is released, it'll be edited and done. I've already listened to the audiobook, and I'm now writing the summary, and by writing the summary, I'm using the physical book as my reference point. So, however, when I did the summary, I mean, I can't say for Amanda, but when I did the summary for My Plain Jane, it was a combination of book and audiobook. Whereas My Calamity Jane, because I don't have access to the audiobook in the UK. But I managed to get day release of the physical book. I was so happy. I didn't think I was going to get it, and I got it. I was just so joyous. I literally danced around my living room. My husband ordered it for me, and it came on the day, and I was so happy. It was read a chapter, write some summary, read a chapter, write some summary. So it's various. Honestly, it can completely vary.
Oh, I loved Plain or My Plain Jane, by the way. That was such a great book.
I really enjoyed My Plain Jane, but I actually enjoyed it more on the second reading. So
Really?
I did. My Lady Jane absolutely cracked me up. It was the antidote I needed in March, and I've recommended it to so many people who want something historical but not quite historical, or they're just having a really bad headspace time and they want something that removes them from reality. So I've recommended My Lady Jane quite a lot. My Plain Jane, I didn't quite enjoy it the first time round, but the second to write the summary, I was laughing at the book a lot more. I do find sometimes, and I don't know about yourself, Rhonda, that sometimes when you read a book, it's okay, but then you read it again and you're like, actually, I enjoy it more because yes, I know how it's going to end. Yes, I know the twists, but it actually helps that you know these little tidbits because it makes you enjoy the hints and tips that happen throughout the book a little bit more. So I enjoyed My Plain Jane the second time round. But and I do say this in the episode, I apologize, I've never read Jane Eyre and I don't want to read Jane Eyre. And I know Jane Eyre is one of your favorites. I tried the Michael Fassbender movie, I honestly I swear I did, and I just couldn't do it.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, so we talked about Jane Eyre on Pop DNA back in June, and like yeah, like it is like one of my favorite like classic books. And so like I think having like that intimate knowledge of Jane Eyre, just like I just saw all of those like little references to it in My Plain Jane. So I'm sure that's, you know, the connection that I had with it. So yeah, definitely kind of
Do you
like some
think as
inside
well?
jokes in there, but I
Yeah.
think it's
Do you think
still,
as
yeah.
do you think having the Charlotte Bronte character and the Jane Eyre character interacting actually added to the entertainment value of it, made it a little bit more interesting?
I think so for sure. Yeah, I think that because the Charlotte character in My Plain Jane kind of acts as like the audience surrogate. Like she kind of like says the things that I as a reader am thinking when I read Jane Eyre. So I thought that that was like a really kind of funny way to like point out some of the things about Jane Eyre that we, you know, might might like take objection to. So yeah, I thought that that was like a really clever way to do that. So we've talked about like when you read for fictional hangover, but when you're reading something that's not, that you're not going to be talking about on fictional hangover, is that a different experience?
So something for my own pleasure.
Right. If that exists at all.
It does. It does. Not as frequently. And to be fair, we try to make sure that what we cover in the fictional hangover are books that we are interested in ourselves, either together or separately. We will make recommendations. Sure. But what I find is I can't physically read another book while I'm summarising a book for the podcast. So, like, at the moment, sure. I'm busy writing the summary for A Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. I can't read another physical book. And I do have one on the go. I do have A.J. Hackworth's The Library of the Unwritten on the go as a physical book. But I've had to put that down until the summary mm-hmm. is done. So I'm listening to audiobooks.
Okay.
And I, unlike Amanda, I enjoy a romance. I am an absolute sucker for a romance, so I tend to dip into old favourites, and I call them lighter reads, but it's, there's certainly like rereads, or there might be continuations of existing series that I'm listening to whilst I'm busy doing a summary. There are also points where we are fantastically ahead of ourselves, so we have like a couple of weeks where it's just read whatever you want. And it's like, oh, the possibilities. What can I read? And I have no idea. So then I go and reread something I've read a million times before. And again, it's a mixture of a physical book or an audiobook. I'm quite happy to do either. I am listening to an audiobook at the moment while I have the summarising on the go. And it's an author called Molly Harper. She tends to do more contemporary books with a magical twist. So I'm listening to her at the moment, and I really like Amanda Ronconi as an audiobook narrator. They're very sassy, they're very snarky. They are snarky books. There's a smattering of romance absolutely everywhere. There is always a happily ever after. But they are central within like more paranormal romance as well. So they do center on vampires and werewolves and shifters and that kind of thing. That's currently what I'm listening to at the moment. I've dipped back into Molly Harper while I'm doing quite a bit of the summarising. Because, unfortunately, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes is a slow summary. It's a very heavy book, so it is taking me a little bit longer to do than necessary.
Yeah, it seemed like it.
Yeah. It's pretty hard to type with one hand and have a hardback that's
sitting on
the other.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I... Sure. Yeah, I'm not sure that I actually want to read that one. Like, I don't know if I want to get to know President Snow.
You'll have to listen to the episode to get all my thoughts and feelings. Sorry.
Okay. Oh, I will.
So that episode is going to be released on the 12th of August. But it's certainly an interesting read. If you're not sure if you want to read it, just listen to our episode, because we'll spoil it enough for you that you can pretend to everybody that you have read it.
Oh, oh, yes, I definitely will be listening to that episode. Excellent. So you said that you like paranormal romance.
And Regency romance.
For Julia Quinn. Oh, I love Regency romance too. Oh, yeah. Have you read any Georgette Heyer?
Possibly. She is not on my bookshelf, though, as I quickly look at my bookshelf behind me.
Okay.
No, she's not on my bookshelf. I may have read it within the mythology, but I do not own a physical copy.
Okay. But I was curious about paranormal romance, because are you a Twilight fan at all?
That is a heavy question to ask. It's very loaded. Okay. Do you want? Can I contextualize?
It is a very complicated question.
It really, really is. I'm going to contextualize and say yes and no. So there's me sitting on the fence. When Twilight first came out, I pick the books up. So yes, I was one who had first edition copies of Twilight. I do not own them anymore because there came a point in my life when I said, I'm not going to read these again. I absolutely adored the first one. I like the second one. The third one, I have a deep hatred for. And the fourth one, I'm okay with-ish. And then as I've read them on multiple occasions, but it came a point when I actually started feeling that the content of the books were very problematic for me and I didn't want to back there. I will say what Stephanie Meyer has done to make people read is phenomenal. She is not the greatest wordsmith in the world. But she's got people to read. And I need to give her a lot of credit for that. However, the content of the books I have issues with. I have issues with other people's books as well. Such as John Green. He's got people to read.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily agree with the content of the book because he certainly romanticises illness. And I think that's an uncomfortable subject to do, and I don't know how right it's being done. But to stick with Twilight, yes, when they first came out, I adored them. I dragged my now husband, then boyfriend, to the movies to come see them. I went with my friends. We had a book club at work just solely to read and talk about the Twilight series. But I think I think my taste has changed. So you're going to ask me about Midnight Sun.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of the same. Like, I was super into them when they first came out, and I was like almost you're never too old for YA fiction, but I was like almost not a teenager anymore when they first started coming out.
I was in my 20s.
But like, so... okay, sure. Yeah, I think I was 18 when the first one came out, so. You know, I was like really, really into them while I read them. And then I kind of just like I watched the movies and everything, but then I just kind of like left it behind and I was done with it. So it's interesting to me to see like this kind of like, I think it's even called like the Twilight Renaissance, like in that we're seeing like on social media that people are kind of like, you know, like Twilight's cool again. I don't know if it was like that or if there was, maybe there's kind of like a catch 22 that like now Midnight Sun is about to come out, which, you know, a lot of people are really excited about that. But I know a lot of people have like mixed feelings about that too. Would you say that you have mixed feelings
about Midnight Sun coming out? I would say that's probably the polite way of putting it. I have thoughts and feelings about it. They're not strongly negative or strongly positive. I'm a little shocked that it was Midnight Sun. I remember getting a copy of Midnight Sun with one of the book releases. It obviously wasn't the full. It was like the first chapter or two. I wish I still had it because I could sell it on eBay for a fortune. I remember getting it and then thinking, huh, okay, that was interesting. I quite like that. That was nice to see the Edward perspective back when I was really into Twilight. But now it's kind of, I don't know, I don't want to sound derogatory towards Stephanie Meyer because, like I say, I have a lot of respect for the lady who's got so many people into reading. It feels lazy for me that you're doing. It feels like essentially, without having read Midnight Sun yet, it's not released yet. And we do plan on covering it on Fictional Hangover in September.
Oh, do you? Okay.
Yes, we do. But having not yet read Midnight Sun, it feels like a very lazy choice where it's a story that's already been written.
Sure.
You're doing it from an alternative perspective and the first chapter, at the very least, has been out for 10 years plus. Do we really need that? Do we really need Edward's perspective? Would it not be better to have some new fiction or potentially a sequel to The Horst, which was probably actually a better book than Twilight?
Oh yeah, for sure.
And I think, I don't know, I'm kind of like, I'm this, the little fangirl in me from X amount of years ago was like, oh yay, another Twilight book. But then the adult in me is kind of like, oh, okay. A little disappointed.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I do feel like it's kind of overkill at this point, because like she did, you know, for the 10th anniversary, she did Life and Death, which is like the gender swapped Twilight. So it was the same story again, just with the genders flipped. And now it's like, once again, it's the same story, but just a little bit different. So, I mean, like, I understand, like, why. Like, I mean, she's going to make a lot of money from it. Like, and, you know, like, I don't begrudge her. Right. Yeah. Like, I don't begrudge her that money. Like, yeah, go get it, girl. But, like, I know that she's, like, she has a lot of stories that she could tell. Why doesn't she tell a different story?
So,
I think that's kind of where I land.
It's kind of like a safety net, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Another safety net. Because it's the third rehash of the same story. And I think I'm more disappointed that there's not something a bit new, a bit different. I don't even mind if it was within the Twilight universe and it was somebody else's story.
Mm-hmm.
I think even that would have possibly been a little bit more interesting, because there was a short story, the life and short death of
of Bree Tanner.
Yes, I really liked that.
The short second life of
Bree Tanner. Yeah, I really liked that. I really rated that as a short story.
I liked that actually.
It was nicely done. It was nicely tied in. And you can imagine the little side character who does appear in the main series, just hovering in the background. And I really liked that. And even if it was something along those lines, I think it would have been slightly more interesting. Or even something historical with one of the older vampires, but 100 years ago. There's just so much scope. When you have vampires, and when you have vampires that live a long time, there is a lot of scope to go elsewhere. And it feels, like I said, a little bit lazy to go through the same story again. I will read the book, though. And you'll be able to hear my thoughts about the book on the Fictional Hangover episode. I'm trying to maintain an open mind on it. I don't want my preconceptions to bleed into the episode. Especially, I'm undergoing similar... a similar thing with the Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. I adored the Hunger Games. I still do adore the Hunger Games as a series of books.
Right.
And the same questions arose of, do we need a prequel? Do we need to find out about Snow? You know, do we need to delve back into that world with characters who we've already met? And it's an interesting topic to discuss, and it's an interesting thought. Well, they are much beloved characters. It's a much beloved world. Is it good to go back there, or is it leave well enough alone?
Yeah. I feel like at least with the Hunger Games one, like, it is like a completely different story. But yeah, I think with Midnight Sun, I'll kind of do the same thing. I'll wait until I hear the Fictional Hangover episode before I decide to read it. So you guys will be my...
That's right. Let us do all the hard work.
Be my litmus test. Oh, yeah. That's why I listen to you guys, honestly. So on your personal TBR, is there like a book that's been on there for like years and you haven't gotten around to reading yet?
Oh, yeah, I have a lot of books that have been on there for years. I keep a lot of graphic novels listed as well. Because I'm really terrible at remembering what graphic novels I do have. So if I'm out about shopping and stuff, at least if I can dip onto my Goodreads, like, oh, I want to read that and I don't own it yet, that's fine. But yeah, I've got loads. as she quickly goes into her Goodreads and has a look, I'm having a quick check.
Yeah, graphic novels is something that I've kind of like just started to get into.
I've just found the book that has been on my TBR list for the longest is a book I do own the physical copy of 3 feet away from me. And it's actually a tie-in book. It's called Peter Max by Bill Willingham. And he is the author of the Fables comic book series with Vertigo. And it is probably my all-time favourite graphic novel series. It's a twist on the usual fairy tale stories. Little Red Riding Hood's awful. she can be really, really awful. Goldilocks is a little too into bears. These are rated for adult books. It's got Snow White and the Big Bad Wolf, and it's got them all in there, but it's twisted. And the artwork is just absolutely beautiful. And there's, you know, there's spin-offs with the Cinderella story, the spin-offs with Jack of Fables, but the main series, it's probably about 22 books, and it's just absolutely fantastic. The stories just flow together so wonderfully. Okay. I have the entire collection, and I can't recommend it enough for anybody who doesn't want to go for the superhero, traditional Marvel DC. If they want to go for something a bit different... Fables, published through Vertigo, is absolutely fantastic.
Okay.
So, book wise, it's a tie in Peter and Max to the Fable series, which I bought in New York. I remember buying this in New York. Oh. In Midtown Comics.
Cool. Interesting.
There you go.
Yeah, I will definitely have to check those out. I love fairies. Yeah, I love fairy tales.
If you're into D&D,
Or
the kind of role play, I highly recommend Rat Queens. It's an all-female band of adventurers.
Okay.
And again, it's rated for adults because of naughty language and other actions that you have to be over 18 to do. It's such a funny series. It really tickles me when I read it. And I highly recommend Rat Queens as well.
Cool. Okay. Thanks for the recommendations. So the last thing I wanted to ask you about, so I know you said that you have some thoughts on the Hugo Awards, in particular the recent awards ceremony. Yeah, this was just
crazy.
Just a cluster something.
That is probably the best way you could describe
So for listeners who maybe don't know exactly, would you want to kind of give a summary of what exactly went down?
What didn't? So I mean, the Hugo Awards have been around for a long, long time, and it's like the most prestigious sci-fi award a sci-fi author can receive, which is fantastic. This year it kind of went a little bit awry. It lasted for 3.5 hours instead of its usual 2.
So like 3 hours?
It was 3.5 hours, I think, it lasted for instead of its usual 2. But you can understand, with it being global and done basically on Zoom, that it had been very difficult to coordinate. I mean, they coordinated it fairly well. But, you know, there would be time lags and delays. So you can imagine a little bit longer. But George R.R. Martin was the MC for the event, and he kind of used it for his own platform to talk about what he wanted to talk about, slightly too much. I did read an article where it was he and Silverberg kept referencing old and obscure and out-of-date trivia from like 50 or 60 years ago when they, from the Hugo Awards. And for a modern audience, that's just not it. When you look through the list of nominees, it's become very diverse. You know, there's a lot of female authors. And this is something I've said on the Fictional Hangover podcast, and specifically to Bridget Tyler, who did an absolutely fantastic book, The Pioneer, which is good sci-fi. That as a female reader, I want to read a female author's sci-fi. I don't need the stereotypical white man's perspective. I need that kind of diversity.
Right. Yeah, we have enough of that already.
Yeah, it's the market is fairly saturated. I don't mind a few new voices, but it's been saturated for a long, long time. But to kind of add to it, there was a lot of probably easy to say institutionalized racism and misogyny in the awards.
Yes.
Though they are, I will give them a certain amount of credit that they are trying to be a lot more diverse. And they've probably achieved it a little bit better than other award ceremonies, such as the Ritas, which is kind of like, it felt like it mirrored the whole backlash regarding the Rita and the RWA kind of mirrored what's gone on with the Hugos. Like, even to the degree of George R. R. Martin mispronouncing people's names when there were audio files made available on how to pronounce them. I find it hugely disrespectful if you don't pronounce somebody's name properly. It lacks the credit and the respect that they deserve. The reward winners, give them the credit for it. It just seemed to be a bit tone deaf to the changes that have taken place within world politics at the moment, and the culture and like the makeup of the nominees.
Right. Yeah. And I wonder, like, why they feel now that they have to like retroactively give awards to sci-fi authors from like the 1940s.
Oh.
Like like they have like what why do they feel like they need to do that? Like
H.P. Lovecraft is one of the biggest authors. Misogynist and racists in literary history. Like, even
anti-Semitic,
he's gone too far. And when a racist tells you you're too racist, you know that's bad. And to give him, and it's like, Hugo Awards, read the room. Read the room. That's just terrible. Do you know what, though?
Yeah.
I was talking about this entire situation with my husband, and we play tabletop games as well as read books. And there's a series called Arkham Horror, and it's based on the works of H.P. Lovecraft. There is a lot of stuff that's based on the work of H.P. Lovecraft, where they take the Elder Gods, you know, they take the idea of Cthulhu, who's obviously the most, you know, well-known of them, but they diversify them. There's... within the tabletop game, there's people of colour, there's women. And they're not just women who are in the background. They are psychologists and, you know, librarians and, you know, people of intelligence and credibility. And Fantasy Flight Games have done a fantastic job of diversifying what H.P. Lovecraft has done. There's even... gay characters, there's people of colour within it. So whereas H.P. Lovecraft has created the Cthulhu ethos, other people with diverse thinking and modern minds have said, we like the idea of Cthulhu, but we're just going to leave your misogynist, racist, anti-Semitic ideals in the past, in your grave where it belongs, and make it better. And I can only imagine H.P. Lovecraft is turning in his grave justifiably because people have taken his creation and made it better, dare I say.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't mind if H.P. Lovecraft is turning in his grave, honestly.
Like, no, it's fine. Not going to keep me up at night.
Yeah, so I don't know, like, if this is, like, going to be a turning point for the awards, if they're going to learn from this backlash and hopefully do better going forward.
I mean, is there a point in giving an award to somebody who's dead and has been dead for, you know, a long, long time? Is there a point? I mean, you know, what are they going to do with that award? It's like, I can understand when the Oscars posthumously give Heath Ledger an Oscar as the Joker. I get that because it was like within a year.
Sure.
But we're talking, you know, a long time. Mm-hmm. What's the point? It's like saying, oh, Shakespeare, here you go. Have a Nobel Peace Prize for literature. It's like,
right.
The dude's been dead for centuries and quite frankly, there's better works out there. don't bother. Give it to somebody who can appreciate it and know that what they've written is making a difference now.
Right. Yeah, there's really no point in giving an award to a work that's, you know, 70 years old and that the author is dead. I don't get that at all. But I do see, like, if I do see any kind of, like, bright spot, like we mentioned before, like the most of the nominees and most of the winners are, you know, people who historically would not have won these awards. They're women, they're people of color. So I think that's significant, and hopefully that will keep trending
I don't want to ever lose these voices. I like the idea of awarding something that deserves it. I really, really do. But I don't want to be blind to all of these or deaf to all of these alternate voices. There's always this culture of whitewashing awards. I just don't understand. I don't understand why. It's like, it's not that they're saying these five books written by these white men are, you know, the impression I get is to say that these five books that have been written by these five white men are the supreme texts that have come out in sci-fi literature this past year. It's like, well, actually, did you pick up anything else? Did you pick up,
I
know 10,000 Doors of January was nominated by Alex E. Harrell, which we discussed on Fictional Hangover. I know Monstrous, a graphic novel I've read, I think it was volume 4, was picked up as a nominee. Have you read them? Or are they automatically dismissed? And the impression you get, and I don't know about yourself, Rhonda, is that you don't even entertain them. If it's not Arthur C. Clarke or Isaac Asimov or George R. R. Martin himself, what's the point? And this is something I've got on my soapbox about before on the podcast, that bookshops are sometimes guilty. I'm not going to say independent bookshops. I think independent bookshops do a very good job of pushing the quieter voices and the minority voices. But larger chain bookshops seem to just have the same people in over and over again. Like, I can go down to the bookshop in my town centre and I'm guaranteed to be able to pick up a George R. R. Martin, I'm guaranteed to pick up an Isaac Asimov, an Arthur C. Clarke, a James Patterson, a Stephen King. Do I want to read those particular authors again and again and again, or do I want something a little bit more diverse? And I think we desperately need that within a culture, not just because representation matters.
It really
does. But diversity and education matters. Pick up a book by a person of colour. Pick up by a book by somebody from a different country. Pick up, you know, a book who is of a different gender identity or sexual orientation or religion, and get a different point of view. It's amazing what literature is out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like at the point where we are now, like we as readers have to be intentional about that, because if we are just kind of picking up whatever we come across organically, the way that books are marketed by and large, and the way that bookstores, you know, like you're mentioning, like the big chain bookstores, they're just going to give you what has historically sold the best in the past. So that's just going to be more books by white men, you know, white people in general, but mostly white men. So if we're actually going to, you know, read diversely, we're going to have to seek out those different voices and those different perspectives ourselves, you know, until, you know, there's big shifts in the publishing and in the book industry by and large, which, you know, I understand that, like, for a lot of readers that feels inorganic. It feels like, you know, it's a lot of work, but I mean, that's the work that we have to do to make sure that these voices are heard by more people. So yeah, that's kind of a soapbox of mine as well.
I completely get that, and it's so difficult to do that as well. And this isn't to say, you know, don't pick up a book just because of you feel guilty into reading it. You know, if you want to read a book, read it because you find pleasure in it as well. You know, you don't want to force yourself to read a book because you have to, and you think, oh, the current climate within the world means I have to read only LGBTQ plus books, so I will only read them, that's it, to the exclusion of all others,
right?
Or I must only read person of colour books because that's what, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement at the moment is so important, and the momentum needs to keep going. But that's not to say if you want to pick up a Regency romance written by a white woman, you can't do it, because, you know, you still need to find pleasure, but you also need to find those points of saying, well, actually, let's find that education. Just for an example, I said I love a Regency romance, and Julia Quinn books in particular. Netflix picked up the Bridgerton series, and I am super ridiculously excited. It's on my Netflix, you know, wait list. As soon as the notification comes out, I'm watching it. And the cast of characters, considering it's a Regency romance, you expect all the characters to be white, and they're not. And before it was before the Black Lives Matter movement, because it was last year when they started filming me, because obviously pandemic, there was massive backlash on Julia Quinn's social media because of the casting. It's just this, it's just beautifully diverse. I mean, to be fair though, I will say you do have Julie Andrews playing Lady Whistledown, and I am just ridiculously excited at that prospect. But there's some central characters that are being played by persons of colour, people who you wouldn't say. Like, there's Simon Bassett, who is one of the lead characters in one of the book. He is English gentry, is being played by Renée Jean Page, and, you know, he's a person of colour. If you look at the IMDb page, it's just absolutely beautiful, the diversity that's in this cast, and the way that Julia Quinn as an author has said, I do not see Simon Bassett as being the white man, because the person they have cast in the role is perfect. He is the essence of Simon Bassett. And I think that's what we also need to take into consideration. And we also need to remember that the world is not white, and it historically has never been solely white. There's always been people of various genders, identities, colour and religion in the background. We've just turned a blind eye to it. And, you know, being British, I know we have problems with colonialism that we were never educated about in school. So it's on me. The onus is on me to educate myself and educate my son. But it's lovely to see the normalisation, hopefully, of diversity within these popular cultures.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this is kind of like a larger conversation within like the Jane Austen fandom and kind of like the period drama fandom in general, that, you know, people of color didn't just appear in, you know, 50 years ago. Like, you know, black people, black people, Asian people have been in Western society for centuries. They've always been here. So, of course, they would exist in Jane Austen's world. They would exist in Regency England. It's just that we've, you know, so whitewashed our history, and period dramas have kind of contributed to that, because we've seen all white casts when that, you know, is not really how it would have been. So yeah, so that's exciting. I hadn't heard of that show, but yeah, I'll definitely have to check that out. I haven't any of the books, but I'm sure
you
that'll
need to. You
I'll
don't
put those on my
to.
List too.
I would suggest as well, if you want like a quick delve into something where it is showing diversity, is Black Girl in a Big Dress on YouTube.
Uh-huh.
It's a web series about African-American Annie O'Farrell cosplayer. And how amazing is that? And she absolutely rocks those outfits. Like, oh, honestly. I heard her on a different podcast being interviewed, and I was like, I need to see this web series. And it was absolutely amazing. So it kind of like, it's set in modern day, but it kind of shows you that, you know, it's allowed. It was there. If you follow certain Twitter profiles like Wiki Victorian, it constantly shows you a diverse series of people throughout history. It's like, you know, trans people existed 150 years ago. There were people of color in Victorian outfits because they were Victorian 150 years ago. This is that. You just need to open your eyes and accept it. I feel like I've stood on my soapbox quite a bit for you.
Yeah. No, I love it. I love it. I feel like our soapboxes are adjacent, so that's okay. I just Googled Bridgerton, and apparently Shonda Rhimes is the producer.
That's
amazing.
Oh yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's gonna be so good.
That was where it first came out. Honestly, I'm ridiculously looking forward to it, because some of my favorite books are Julia Quinn novels, and yeah, but just I absolutely adore them. They're like chicken soup for the soul. Those books. Julia Quinn's a default for me. She's very much a default setting. And I need to have her books
good
on day of release. Will she respond to any of my Instagrams? No. Hello, lady, how much
maybe someday. We'll just have to make sure that like Fictional Hangover becomes like really famous, so then like she'll have to talk to you.
Well, you know, she the author is she lives in Seattle, and she does, and she often says how she visits her local coffee house to write. And I'm like, okay, there can't be that many of that type of coffee house in Seattle where it originated from. I'll just visit them all until I find her and stalk her and go, I love you.
Yeah,
sign
there
all
are
my books.
Yeah. There really aren't that many coffee shops in Seattle, so I'm sure you'll find her no problem.
I won't have a restraining order instantly put down on me. It's fine though, because then I'll finally get to meet the Mandarin and I'll drag her along with me, so it's fine.
Oh yeah,
we've never met in person, so we might as well do it, and I'll drag her along with me.
You guys have never met.
No, our romance is purely social.
Yeah, and then I'm in Tacoma, so I can come up and hang out with you guys too. Do you want to let everyone know where they can find Fictional Hangover, and if you have any special things to plug for Fictional Hangover?
Fictional Hangover is across all social medias. So it's Fictional Hangover on Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, and Goodreads. It's Fictional Hangover, no ER, on Twitter. And Fictional Hangover, no ER.redbubble.com for all of our merchandise, including one that was created in homage to Rhonda, which is the décolletage. that got put up within 15 minutes of a conversation.
Yes, I noticed that.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter as Vidania82 and on Instagram as Claire Drinks Tea. But coming up for Fictional Hangover, we have our 100th episode coming up in August on the 26th. So on the 25th... Yeah. So on the 25th, goodness knows if this is going to go well. It's either going to be the best thing since sliced bread or complete car crash. So either way, tune in for it. Me and Amanda are going live.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's 1 p.m. Pacific.
Oh, I'm so excited.
3 Central, 4 Great. Eastern, and 9 p.m. We class it as Claire time, so GMT. On Tuesday, the 25th of August.
Sure.
We have some hopefully fun things planned, but we are also going to talk about a short story, which is a free short story available on Tinterwebnet. And it's Heads Will Roll by Lish McBride. So we're going to encourage people before the live show to have a read of that. And we will be posting links on our social media to the event and to the short story. So we are going to cover that live. Goodness knows if it's going to work. Fingers crossed we have no internet issues. So it could go either way, but we are just hugely excited and massively nervous about it. And we do have some bonus episodes of authors that are dropping soon as well, but I'm not going to say who. You have to subscribe.
Oh, yes. Go subscribe. Yes.
Yeah.
That's very exciting. I will definitely be... I will be tuning into your live.
That's listener number 3. But, yes. It's terrifying. I'm so happy that we reached the 100. Really
congratulations on 100 episodes, and it's a great podcast. It's a lot of fun to listen to. So everyone go listen to it. but thank you so much for stopping by from across the pond.
Yes.
And chatting with me today.
It was spiffing.
I love chatting about books, really, so this is like...
Anytime, Rhonda. You are more than welcome on Fictional Hangover anytime. You have to read the book, though, and not just use us to cheat.
Yes. I will. I'll try.
You've told us now, so, you know...
Well, yeah, just let me know what book and I'll read it.
Okay.
but yeah, thank you so much. Hopefully we'll catch up again soon.
Definitely. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks again to Claire for joining me for this reader chat on Rhonda with a Book. You can find links to everything we talked about, as well as a list of Claire's recommended books at rondawithabook.com. And you can get exclusive bonus content through my Patreon. You can also follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. Thanks for listening, and as always, happy reading!